Morning, everyone. Just before I start, I just wanted to thank Tom Brailsma, who spoke before the break and gave a really eloquent overview of the interaction required between scientists and non-scientists in developing these protocols, bringing, if you like, empirical field research data to the table, interacting with politicians, aggregators, all sorts of other stakeholders in the process. So what I'll effectively do here is overview that entire process from a Michigan State point of view, taking field data from our sites, and developing a protocol and trying to implement that in the current carbon market scenarios that we have at the moment. So just to give a quick overview of offsets and some opportunities that arise from these offsets. We're terming the offset, it's a tradable credit from greenhouse gas emission reductions, avoidance, or sequestration, which can be considered to be outside a cap. And I realize that cap and trade is a very four-letter word at the moment in certain areas, but effectively outside of either a geographic cap or a sectoral cap. We're talking about these tradable credits from these offset projects. It may or may not be, depending on legislation, a key source of regulatory compliance with other sectors, the power sector, electricity sector, who might want to be able to purchase these credits, which are generated from the potentially the agriculture and forestry sectors. We talk about the agriculture and forestry sectors being the potentially the largest source of these offset credits. However, in truth, there are many fewer available than potential federal legislation would have us believe, potentially only 10% of what the recent American Power Act was stipulating offsets available for these for the polluting industries. So we need some new approaches, ideally, to try to, in effect, generate more credits, offset credits from the agriculture and forestry sector. We've heard a lot about carbon sequestration, and Tom and others have introduced nitrous oxide and its potential for reduction. Obviously, it's what you consider a low-hanging fruit. It's got a high global warming potential. So small reductions in nitrous oxide emissions potentially can generate large amounts of CO2 equivalent credits for trading. All right. So yeah, just a brief overview of some legislation or non-legislation and the legitimacy of some of the work we're trying to do here. That's just a synopsis of various bills that have gone before various states, Senate and House. More recently, the American Power Act, Kerry Lieberman, whether that goes through or not is now very unlikely, as we are aware. But just to sort of take a snippet, and a very prominent snippet, on page 386, line 5, the ability to use technology or practices to improve the management of nitrogen fertilizer use as a means of generating offsets to be traded with the capped sectors. So just again, to give a quick overview of what organizations and bodies are out there at the moment in the US and abroad, you see a whole range of multi-state programs, various standards, various method developers, and various registries which may or may not be interacting under one roof. Just for an example, the two at the very bottom there, the REGI, the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative, and the Western Climate Initiative. And also on the top left there, you'll see the VCS, the Voluntary Carbon Standard, and some of the future slides I'll be discussing our approach to try and get our protocol onto the Voluntary Carbon Standard books, if you like. So when I talk about the entity for our protocol, I'm referring typically to the Voluntary Carbon Standard. So yes, some just research and rationale, the overview of the actual field data, the empirical work that we've done in attempting to generate this protocol, work done in Michigan on commercial fields, commercial farmer fields, corn, soybean rotations, conventional tillage, a number of N rates in order to try to generate the relationship between N rate and N2O emissions. On the top right, you'll see a typical satellite view of one of the sites and the randomized complete block design that we have, four applications, six N rates, as I said. On the bottom left are the view of the Lower Peninsula of Michigan, showing where the sites are that my colleague John Hoban took measurements from. And on the bottom right, potential sites that we're trying to hope to measure depending on funding sources throughout the Midwest and also North Carolina. So an attempt to, if you like, replicate the work we've been doing in Michigan throughout the Midwest and beyond. So just to make it clear, what we're doing here is looking at N fertilizer rate as a proxy for nitrous oxide emissions. As you're probably aware, going to all individual sites and measuring nitrous oxide emissions is impractical, to say the least. So we're trying to use a simple, if you like, proxy, as with the IPCC, for looking at N2O emissions. And from those N-rate reductions and N2O emission reductions, we're generating, in effect, these greenhouse gas tradable credits. So just some scope and eligibility of the actual work we're trying to do through the VCS, the Voluntary Carbon Standard. It's their Sector 14. It slightly differs from the CDM for the UNFCCC. It's A of OLU, Agriculture, Forestry and Other Land Use, and it's in the subsection, if you like, of Improved Cropland Management. Eligibility for the practices that hope to generate these credits, basically nitrogen fertilizer management, we're talking about adhering to best management practices at all times. I want to make that very clear. This is not just a protocol which is talking about N-rate. Although the N-rate reductions will generate the N2 emission, the credits, we're, in order to be able to be eligible for projects which utilize the protocol, best management practices have to be practiced. And that involves things that Tom was talking about, placement, timing, etc. So not just an N-rate, but also adhering to best management practices. Nitrogen fertilizer types, again, Tom talked about his meta-analysis with various types of N fertilizer potentially altering N2 emissions. Here we're using each N, irrespective of its source, whether it's from an organic source or a synthetic source, is considered equivalent. So we're not talking about N type differing in N2 emissions. We're using each N from each source as a single unit of N. So here's just some accounting, if you like, for the protocol here. Here on the x-axis, I've got the fertilizer rate, and on the y-axis, I've got the N2 emissions. And what I've two lines here, which I've labeled tier 1 and tier 2, tier 1 being the conventional IPCC 1% emission factor that's currently in place. Effectively, it's agnostic of N rate. It's a simple linear line. The tier 2 is actually the relationship that we found with our work in Michigan, in which at higher levels of N, beyond which the crop is able to uptake or the ecosystem is able to cope with, there are much more higher emissions of N2O. And that's in line with one of the last slides that Tom showed about this surplus of N beyond what the crop can uptake. So if we look here just to if you like, incentivize the potential for farmers to reduce their N rate, if we just take a simple reduction from roughly 160 to 130 kilograms of N per hectare per year, if you look at where those vertical lines intersect, the two tier lines, if you just were to suppose that we're using a tier one relationship, you would get effectively reductions of N2O, but they'd be rather small, on the order of about, in our case, around about 300 grams of N2O nitrogen per hectare per year. However, if you intersect that with the tier two, you see you're generating much larger, as obviously, a much larger emission reductions of N2O, and in effect, a greater incentive for a farmer to, if you like, to change or manipulate his practice. There could potentially be more rewards associated with the larger reduction in N2 emissions brought about by exactly the same N rate reduction. Just to emphasize that point there. So what we have here is obviously we're talking about reducing N rate, and obviously the first thing you worry about is, well, what's going to happen to productivity and yield? Obviously the farmer's not going to accept any huge reductions in yield brought about by an N rate reduction. And we see that from a lot of work in the Midwest in particular in corn and corn soybean rotations, that this is not necessarily the case. In fact, it's not the case at all. We're looking at a new approach, or a relatively new approach, looking at the economic optimization of nitrogen, not based on yield goal recommendations from previous crops. We're looking at an approach where you're adding particular amounts of N up to a point at which you cannot you can recoup that amount in the price of the crop that you receive after applying that N. So we just have some information from the Iowa State University, just for an example here, just looking at various ratios of nitrogen price to crop price. Typical ones that are used are the schematic at the bottom, 0.05, 0.1, up to 0.2. And you see in that vertical blue bar on the chart on the right there, is what's considered the economic optimum nitrogen rate. And this is generated from a large number of studies in various states, dozens of studies, if not hundreds of studies in the various states, looking at different N rates and accumulating all that information together to generate what we classify as the maximum return to nitrogen. So there's that range, that economic optimum range between 143 and 120. And what we have, if you like, in the middle of that is the maximum return to nitrogen. And you notice that on the top of that line there, we're talking about further to the right there, 150 to 200, you're getting about 100% of the maximum yield, the maximum agronomic yield. But on the position on the curve there between 143 and 120, you're getting virtually no reduction in yield, nothing that's statistically significant. So you can imagine a farmer fertilizing at a very high rate, in effect coming down that curve towards the maximum return to nitrogen and not having any effect on yield, but an ability to reduce his N rate and potentially generate these N2O reduction credits. So just to take that a little bit further, look at the technical potential and put some numbers on that description there. For the tier one reduction, that straight line, remember, for Michigan, that reduction, that 20-odd pound reduction, it's generating on the order of 0.05 tonnes of CO2 equivalent per acre per year. However, if we look at, for instance, possibly a more realistic scenario where farmers are applying a little bit more than the maximum return to nitrogen would suggest, say 225 pounds reducing to 190 pounds, and if you can imagine, that's quite a long way to the right of that non-linear equation. So what you see here is, as a result of that, that reduction would be able to generate about over half a tonne of carbon dioxide equivalent per acre a year, depending on, obviously, the cost of carbon and where the legislation goes through. Obviously, those reductions potentially can generate cash incentive for the farmer to change his management practice. So we take, just for instance, to extrapolate that work to the total amount of corn planted in the U.S. This year, just under 90 million acres. Translating that from that Tier 2 reduction you see above, you're able to generate per year on the order of 50-odd plus million tons of CO2 equivalent per acre a year. And that goes some way to deal with, if you like, the projected deficit of these offsets within the next 10 years generated from either legislation or what's actually realistically available out there in agricultural and forestry situations. So just to talk a little bit about, if you like, the compliance and the controversy associated with agricultural and greenhouse gas reduction protocols, what we're trying to do here is have a conservative approach to establish a baseline from which we can then reduce the N rate and reduce the nitrous oxide emissions. Ideally, we'd be looking for verifiable management records from a farmer or a landowner to generate a baseline of previous N rates such that we can calculate this baseline and then be able to calculate reductions below that baseline for the project period. The additionality issue is a concern. What we do here, or what we're trying to do here, is sort of develop a performance or a project standard test such that, in effect, the project practice is not a business as usual practice. It's a practice which goes beyond the business as usual practice and is able to generate credits as a result of that. Permanence and reversal is an issue, obviously, with carbon sequestration, for an example. If you're doing no-till, then convert back to tillage. Potentially, you're releasing all that carbon that you trapped during the course of a 5 or 10 year project, as mentioned before. With nitrous oxide in this project protocol, that's not an issue. You're not adding N in the first place. So you're avoiding N2 emissions up front. So in effect, the process is irreversible and permanent. There's no N in the system to start. Potentially, it's a producer aggregation issue where you have a large number of farmers, producers banding together, such that even if one or two revert back to original practice, there's effectively a collective persistence of credits because of the large number of people potentially adopting these projects. Again, with project leakage, there's no project leakage because there's no yield reductions associated with the reduction in N rate, so no yield compensation elsewhere outside the project area, therefore no additional N use. So there's no leakage associated with this protocol. And again, there's obvious co-benefits. We're not just talking about nitrous oxide here. We're reducing N in the environment. We're reducing reactive N in the forms of, for instance, nitrate, nitric oxide, and other Ns, which are a pollution problem. So just to clarify, the attributes and provisions of the protocol we're trying to show you here, it's scientifically robust empirical field data over a number of years. There's environmental integrity associated with that. It's transparent. It's simple, in effect. I use that term in the best possible sense. It negates productivity loss. There's an economic incentive to do that. It benefits the farmer with a more economically appropriate nitrogen rate application. There's an environmental incentive, as we mentioned before, N2 reduction and associated co-benefits with reactive N in the environment. Just with regards to implementation and impact, the complexity, as I mentioned, is low. The expertise required to either validate or verify the projects associated with this protocol. There's low specificity, and there's no real technical expertise required. Again, resources are minimal, and that's a big issue there. Cost benefit to the farmer. Does he have to do anything extra to qualify for this? Not really. If he has good management records, we can generate these baselines. He can potentially work with these projects. The uptake speed could be fast based on the low complexity, and the uptake scale could be large, potentially. Again, as a result of the expertise low, minimal resources, and a low complexity. Anyways, and from as a result of all that, there's definitely a high potential for this style of protocol, and it may not be the only one, and I'm not saying this should be, there's room for many other protocols potentially in these areas of agriculture, but for the meantime, there's a potential for this simple one to generate large numbers of offset credits. And with that, I'll thank the field and laboratory staff, on-farm study staff, and my colleagues for scientific discussion, and note the funders, EPRI, the National Science Foundation, LTR, the Queensland University of Technology, and the Michigan Agricultural Experimental Research Stations. Thank you.